history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. Stories that, if we take the time to listen, might just add to our perspective. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve those stories of theirs so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And in that process, we're always educated, we're always entertained, and so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. Today, you're going to develop a picture of the price of freedom from three men who contributed to it in a multitude of ways. Three men who served in three different branches of service during World War II, who grew up in three different U.S. states, Pennsylvania, Oklahoma, and California, who all had very different experiences, but without question, all developed a life-changing perspective on the price of freedom. Price and value are two different things, and this week we have perhaps our most important method of making sure the value of our freedom matches the price that was paid for it by exercising our right to vote. These men fought to defeat tyrannical regimes and preserve our system of government and the freedoms and ideals it seeks to uphold. I thought that would be a good focus ahead of Election Day, and I hope by the end of the hour that you might feel the same way. The first veteran you're going to hear from is Ruben Ramirez, who served with the Blue Devils of the 88th Infantry Division in Italy. He would be wounded three times and suffer an even greater loss than that, as you'll hear. But we're going to start with how he experienced December 7th, 1941, and the first day of war for the U.S.
Three other friends of mine, we were all in the downtown theater in Los Angeles. They announced, they stopped the movie and announced that what had happened to Pearl Harbor and everything else. So they cut the movie and started playing patriotic music, and everybody and the people were just crowding and running outside, you know, with excitement of it. But we just looked at each other and said, well, I guess there's going to be a war. Although we, as kids, we would go to the library and read all about World War I, about the fighting and the airplanes and all that, and then we'd go to a movie. So when that hit us, we were kind of excited about it. We didn't know if we were going to be involved, into how deep we were going to be involved.
So your older brother goes in shortly thereafter, and I guess you probably had some time still to finish up high school?
I didn't finish high school. I dropped out 11th grade. And I went to work. When I came back, I finished my GED testing and everything. I passed that with good grades and everything. I regretted dropping out afterwards, but what was done was done.
Well, I'm curious what it was like to still be here in the States and know your brother was heading overseas. Were you concerned for him? Were you worried about him? Did you keep in touch with him? What was that like?
We more or less kept in contact, and whenever he was assigned to camps around California along the coastline, he was in St. Louis Obispo, Fort Ord, other places that we could travel to. We'd all pile into the car and go and spend a weekend with him.
Kind of sounds like you looked up to him.
We were close. We were very close. His nickname was Hank. His older friends always called me, "Here comes little Hank," because I was like hanging on to his coattail, going to the baseball games and everything. And he took care of me pretty good.
Did you sign up because he was already in, or did you wait to get drafted yourself?
I got drafted. I was 18 in July of 43, and I was in the Army November of 43, so 3 months after my birthday. Went to Camp Roberts, got trained there and everything. Finished my training. We got a 30-day leave. Iron and I at home, and then we reported to Fort back east, and we got it re-outfitted and everything else. All the group that I trained with at Camp Roberts, we all reported there. Got outfitted and everything, and we were there about 2 weeks, and they started calling, fall out in the parade grounds, and they started calling names to get on board trucks. Everybody got on the trucks except me. I was the only one left in the parade grounds, trying to find out where I was supposed to go, and I told the sergeant, "What am I going to do?" He said, "Well, I can't find your name on the list. I can't find your number on the list." So he checked with another officer and up the line, and they finally found my records at the Field Artillery headquarters. So I had to wait. Everybody that shipped out that day went to England, and I had to wait for 3 weeks for another batch of people to come in. we assembled to go out, and we got shipped to Italy, which was a 23-day trip over to the Atlantic. Newport News, Virginia to Naples, Italy. It was 23 days in a convoy.
And I want to hear about that. And I know you didn't have it easy. Three Purple Hearts certainly illustrate that. But have you thought about what would have been different had you not been left behind there? Had you gone over to England with everybody else?
I met one of my friends afterwards, and his report was a lot of most of them were killed, a lot of them were captured, a lot of them were wounded. There were very few that survived because they were in the main invasion.
So the guys you trained with are guys that were hitting the beaches of Normandy on June 6th?
They were in Normandy, and they were in the first wave, the way I understand it.
So that would have been you, and you and I wouldn't be talking right now.
Exactly. Well, there were survivors, but who knows? God only knows what would have happened. Rome was captured on June 4th, I think it was. Shortly thereafter, I joined the division as a replacement.
This is the 88th Infantry Division.
They were offline at that time. I joined the squad, which was Company E, 349th Infantry Regiment. They assigned me to be a BAR team leader. Myself and two other men carried the ammunition, carried the BAR, which weighed about 19.25 pounds, and protected the flanks or whatever the firepower was needed. We were fighting out in the open, and I don't know how I got hit because I didn't feel anything. There was excitement of the fighting. I didn't know it was hit until I started feeling my shoe so wet inside. And I looked down and I seen blood coming out of my boot. And I called for a medic. They patched me up, sent me back to the aid station. From there, they sent me to the hospital. But I didn't know I was hit until I felt some pain and felt my shoe all soggy. It had been raining, so I figured it was bad because of the water. But when I checked it out, my socks was all red with blood. And it got me back to the aid station.
Did that get your attention at all? Did that make you feel a little more susceptible or vulnerable?
Definitely, because artillery has no conscience. It can hit way over here. You can be over here and a little further away from where it hits. But a shell breaks up into so many little pieces, big pieces and little pieces, that anyone can hit you. That's what hit me on my ankle, a piece of shrapnel.
So you're in the hospital recuperating, trying to get better so you can go help your buddies some more, and you get word from home that your brother has been killed in this same war.
Yeah, that was notifying me that he had been killed.
That had to be devastating for you. I can't imagine what that felt like.
It was very devastating. Yeah. Well, the staff was real good. You know, they understood. So they kind of left me alone in my sorrow. But they were all understanding, and they took care of me, you know, to my benefit.
And I know you had plenty of motivation already. I mean, you had a clear purpose you were fighting for. The world was at stake here, but I imagine that made it more personal for you. Did that give you more motivation to win this war and also more motivation to make it home to your family?
I'm motivated to be safer, to keep them out of danger as much as possible, but it's impossible to say, well, I'm not going to go out there because I know they're going to be shooting there. You had to do it. You had to continue the war as it was as a fighting soldier. You had to go out and do it again.
So you heal up and you go back to your outfit, back on the BAR?
Yep, still go back. They saved it for me. Two different people were assigned to me because the other ones had been wounded too earlier. So we separated and then never came back to the squad. So when I went back, they put me in my same position as a BAR team leader with two new men that I have to, you know, get reacquainted and trained and to see what kind of action that they would be giving or what kind of backup they could give you. But you have to depend on your teammates.
And I mentioned that was only the first of three times that you were wounded during the war. What was the second?
Again, shrapnel. We're in a firefight and the Germans were in front of us and there was a valley to the back of us and we were in the hillside looking down in the valley, but the fighting was in a town which was in front of us. We were in the crest of the road of the hill, and their shell was hitting down there in the valley because our troops were moving up on that side. And I was in a hole upstairs looking toward the town where the enemies were. And my friend, my mates there, jumped out of the hole hollering that he was wounded, jumped out of the hole, and I seen that a hole about the size of a fist out of his calf was gone. you know, from where the shell hit, where shrapnel hit him. And he got out of the hole. I pulled him back down, hollered at the sergeant. The sergeant said, well, the aid men are busy, so get him and take him back to the aid station, which is about 150 yards in a farmhouse to the other side. So I got him and calmed him down and got him in a fireman's carry and started down and away from the crest of the hill so that the enemy won't see me until I got into an open field. And then we were running across the open field when I felt a pain in my hand and in my thigh. And I fell down and I told the guy, I'm dropping the packs here, because we were all loaded down with packs. So it says, so, and then we'll make it the rest of the way. But in that time, there was sniper fire coming at us. So he said, we got to get up and get out of here. So we finally got him into the aid station and they took care of him right away. And then they asked me if I wanted some dry socks to take back to the guys. I said, yeah. I said, yeah, because my shoes are all wet and full of water. And again, I took off my boot and the blood had run down my leg. And they said, okay, let's take a look at you. So the aid man looked at me and said, no, you're not going back out. I lost my pack. I lost my souvenir pistols. Lost everything that I had in a pack. A personal being, you know, things.
You had left that in the field just trying to make it there, right?
Yeah, so somebody else picked them up and got the pistols, and I hope they shared whatever it was, what they wanted. Because, you know, it's all personal stuff that you pick up along the way and you keep for little souvenirs. But I had taken a .32 caliber Walther off of a German officer. Earlier, when we were walking up the road and there was a farmhouse, the lieutenant tells me, take your team, go and check out that farmhouse. Wait, they're walking in the road. So when we get over there, we start hollering if they're in there to come out in English, you know, and in German, comes to say here, you know, try to make some kind of communication. So two soldiers came out with their hands up, and we took them aside, and then we start saying, anybody else in there? And then this officer walks out with his hands up, and two other soldiers come out with him. So there was five people in there, and there was only three of us. But when he approached me, I told him, you know, in front of me, we started searching down. I got the pistol off of him, and I lost that. That was a personal thought to having it.
The thing that strikes me, and I know you're not patting yourself on the back, you're just telling me what happened, but so often we hear these kind of stories, and when you're in that situation, you do what you hope the other guy would do for you. But I'm struck by a verse in the Bible. It says, greater love has no man than this, that he lay down his life for his friend. And you almost lost your life trying to save someone else's.
Well, it happens like that, but you don't give that a thought, though. You do what you have to do, especially somebody wounded like that, because he was really hurting and he was bleeding good, and I just had to get him over there. There was no other thought of doing nothing else but getting him there.
So you've told us about two times being hit by shrapnel, and neither time did you really realize what had happened to you. What about the third? What were the circumstances there?
Oh, it was a shrapnel from a mortar. We were online on advancing, but we stopped at a farmhouse. Some of the guys went into the farmhouse. Some of the guys went to the barn to get some rest, to cook up things, clean up, or just relax or something. And I told my sergeant, well, I'm going to go over to the house to see some of the guys. So I was walking across the barnyard when mortar shells came in there. And I was in the middle of it, so all I did was take off. And I just ran to the house and got in there. And then I told the guy again, you better check me out because I feel some blood running down my leg. He looked and said, well, I can't tell if there's any metal in there or not, but you're bleeding pretty good. You're going back to the hospital for x-rays to make sure. Patched me up, put me in an ambulance back to the hospital, took x-rays, kept me for a couple of days, sent me back because they didn't find no metal in there. You know, they just sewed it up and sent me back in a few days. I got a few days rest out of it anyway.
It makes me wonder what all that did to your outlook, because here you are, your brother's been killed in this war. You've been wounded three times. Moving on from there, were you scared that the next time was going to be worse, or did you feel like, you know what, nothing's going to happen to me if I can take care of all of this?
If you say that you're not scared, you're crazy, because you have to be scared no matter what. You anticipate, if it's going to be combat, you know, you start the fighting, you have to anticipate, is one going to hit me now or later or what's going to happen? But to say that you're not scared, it's just a poor saying that no one realizes what you're in. I say I was scared, and everybody tells you that they weren't scared in combat. I'm not going to say they were liars, but...
Tell me about the Apennines campaign. What was the fighting like? What were the conditions like? Because I've heard some pretty awful stories about the weather conditions, the terrain, the enemy. How did you experience that?
Once you got out of the Po Valley and into the mountains, you're fighting rain, you're in fog, you're in total black darkness. You don't know where they're at. They know where you're at. They're up higher and they can see where we're progressing along the roads, because you have to stick to the roads, and there are very places that you can get away from track climbing a mountain. But the worst experience was being up in the mountains, and you're on guard duty at midnight, pitch black. You can't see your hand in front of your eyes, like in front of your face, and then it's foggy. You hear the water dripping off of the leaves, making noises. Your senses become acute to hear what kind of noise are you hearing. You can't see anything, but you hear a particular dripping on this side or rustling or on that side. I mean, I was scared of the dark. I have to sleep with a nightlight. I have to sleep with light. If I fall asleep when it's dark, when I wake up, I get a panic attack. The worst part is I make sure the lights are on.
That's something you've just had to live with ever since the war?
Yeah. I sleep with the lights on outside. I sleep with the nightlights inside. It's something you can't say, turn it off. You can't turn it off.
Wow. Do you feel the price of freedom a little more deeply now? That is Ruben Ramirez. You can link to his complete original interview at hometownheroesradio.com. And when we come back, another veteran who also lost his brother in the war and has his own incredible story of survival. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this.